Let's open up to Numbers chapter 16 and continue with our look at this attempted coup against Moses and Aaron by some of their distant cousins within the tribe of Levi. There's nothing chronologically part of this passage to say this happened on any particular date, but my suspicion is that it happened very shortly after Moses had to announce that there was a 38.5-year penalty phase that had been added to the Israelis' time in the wilderness. So they end up 40 years between the time they left Egypt and when they enter the Promised Land. This is because of the bad reporting by the spies and the attempt to even stone Moses and Aaron and Joshua and Caleb for trying to say that they should still try to go into the Promised Land on God's schedule. But all that is past now, and I believe this is part of the fallout from that beginning of the next 38.5 years of wandering. So here's the way it's reported. Chapter 16 of the book of Numbers, verse 1. Now Korah, and his name becomes very prominent here, the son of Izhar, son of Kohath, son of Levi. So the Kohathites are those amongst the tribe of Levi who are charged with the carrying of the holy objects, like the Ark of the Covenant and the Table of Showbread and the menorah and the altar of incense. All of those holy objects that have rods, the Kohathites are in charge of carrying. So that might have contributed to them thinking that they would be good people to take over from the priests, such as Aaron and his sons. Now the Kohathites are camping on the south wall of the tabernacle. That is, on the exterior south wall of the tabernacle. And right next to them, to the south, would be the tribe of Reuben. And I find that intriguing because the next people involved in this coup are from the tribe of Reuben. Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men. So it's kind of a south side rebellion against Moses and against Aaron the priest. They rose up before Moses with a number of the people of Israel, 250 chiefs of the congregation, chosen from the assembly, well-known men. So I kind of said yesterday that this is a bit of a democratic reaction to Moses and Aaron's leadership on behalf of God. These guys think they know best, and so they're going to take a vote and get these Kohathites put in charge. Now, I don't know whether or not they think they might be able to then go ahead and go into Israel anyway, into the Promised Land anyway, if they're in control of the tabernacle and of the moving of the tent of God's meeting. It's possible, but they certainly do want to be in charge. Verse 3, they assembled themselves together against Moses and against Aaron and said to them, "You've gone too far. For you, for all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and he who is among them. Why then do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of he who is?" So the accusation here is that Moses and Aaron think they're better than everyone else, and that they are seizing control because they think they are better than everyone else. Now that's not the case, but that's what's being charged. So Moses, when he heard it, he fell on his face. Now, I assume he's falling on his face because he's talking to God about it. But what we read next is what he said back to Korah, who's the ringleader of this whole coup. He said to Korah and all his company, "In the morning, he who is will show who is his and who is holy, and will bring him near to him. The one whom he chooses, he will bring near him." So God must have spoke to Moses in that moment that Moses is on his face and tells Moses, "I'll deal with this tomorrow. You give Korah these instructions." And here they are, verse 6. "Do this. Take censers." Those are little metal containers for burning incense. "Korah and all his company, put fire in them and put incense on them before he who is tomorrow. The man whom he who is chooses shall be the holy one. You have gone too far, sons of Levi." So it's a challenge of incense, which I find interesting because you remember, not too far back in the past, because more than likely, I think this is taking place still in the second year of the Exodus. So at the beginning of the second year of the Exodus, when they were dedicating the temple, two of Aaron's sons were struck down by God for improperly offering incense, strange fire, before God. So here we have God telling Moses to put them in a similar situation, to let them offer incense if they think they can be accepted by God in doing so. Verse 8, "Moses said to Korah, 'Hear now, you sons of Levi, is it too small a thing for you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do service in the tabernacle of he who is, and to stand before the congregation to minister to him? And that he has brought you near him and all your brothers, the sons of Levi, with you, would you now seek the priesthood also?'" So he reminds them, God has selected you from all the tribes of Israel to be right up next to the tabernacle, to actually carry the holy objects. Why is it that you want even more? "Therefore, it is against he who is that you and all your company have gathered together. What is Aaron that you grumble against him?" So it's basically a how dare you. You have a special place already. Why do you think that you should be absolutely, totally in charge as the high priest? Because more than likely, this guy is angling to take over the high priest for himself. Verse 12, "Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, 'We will not come up.'" So he's already been talking with the leader of this whole movement, with Korah, but he also knows there's other leaders, Dathan and Abiram, that are not there in his presence that are causing trouble. So he wants to talk to them as well. So he says, "Why don't you come up here and talk to me?" And they said, "We're not coming up there." Verse 13, "It is a small thing that you've brought us up out," "Is it a small thing that you've brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you must also make yourself a prince over us?" Now, what is it they're actually accusing him of here? Is it, "You dragged us out of Egypt, a land flowing with milk and honey"? We've not seen that phrase used in reference to Egypt before. Yes, there was plenty of agriculture there, and there were places for the cattle. But typically, this is the phrase that we've used or seen used in relationship to the land of Canaan, to the promised land. So I think it may be that he is referring to the most recent time that they were right on the border, that they were ready. Once the spies came back with the report, they were going to go in. And then all of a sudden, everything changed, and Moses gave God's declaration that you have to turn south and start your penalty phase, wandering in the wilderness 38 and a half years longer. So I think what they're saying is, how dare you? We were on the cusp of going into the promised land. We'd heard everything about how wonderful it was, and now you've drug us back out here into the wilderness to kill us. And worse than that, you think you're our king. You think you're in charge of us as our prince, our governor. Verse 14, moreover, you have not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put the eyes out of these men? We will not come up. So their challenge is, everybody's seen it. Everybody knows what I'm talking about here. You're not going to tell them that they can't believe their eyes as to what's really transpired here. How dare you? And no, we won't come to where you tell us to come. So it's a big confrontation here, folks. Verse 15, and it wears on Moses. Moses was very angry. I mean, he's ticked to the point that he doesn't want to be an intercessor on behalf of these guys anymore. And he says, do not respect their offering. I didn't take one donkey from them, and I have not harmed one of them. So he's ready to write them off, to say, God, I've never done anything wrong to them. Don't hear them out and do good things for them. Then Moses said to Korah, be present, you and all your company before he who is, you and they and Aaron tomorrow, meaning at the tabernacle. The showdown is going to take place at the tabernacle. Let every one of you take his censer and put incense in it, and every one of you bring before he who is his censer, 250 censers. You also and Aaron, each his censer. So the whole bunch that is claiming that Korah should be the new high priest and they should be priests as well, they are supposed to show up with incense burners if they dare. So every man took his censer, put fire in them, laid incense on them, and they stood at the entrance of the tent of meeting with Moses and Aaron. Korah assembled all the congregation against them at the entrance of the tent of meeting, and then the glory of he who is appeared to all of the congregation. So the showdown begins, and God shows up to resolve the issue. He who is spoke to Moses and to Aaron, saying, separate yourselves from among this congregation that I may consume them in a moment. So everybody that is showing up in support of the 250 rebels are on the hit list. They are in the blast zone of God's wrath at this exact moment. Thankfully for them, Moses is willing to act as the intercessor here. Yes, he is particularly upset with some of them who are taking the leadership role here, but he does not want to see those who are stupid enough to follow this to bear the same penalty. So they fell on their faces, that is Moses and Aaron, and said, oh God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be angry with all the congregation? So just because we've got these 250 idiots that are trying to pull off this coup, should everybody that's standing around them have to die too? And the intercession works. He who is spoke to Moses, saying, say to the congregation, get away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. So God gives a chance for people to back off, to rethink their support of these guys. And Moses rose, went to Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke to the congregation, saying, Depart, please, from the tents of these wicked men. Touch nothing of theirs, lest you be swept away with all their sins. So we started at the tent of meeting, but now we've moved over to the South Side neighborhood, where the Kohathites and the Reubenites are next door neighbors. I mean, their boundary is very close. And apparently, this group are all living in the same area together, which may have contributed to why they thought they could pull this off, because they were all buddies. They were all pals. And so Moses is here to say, God is about to execute justice and judgment upon this leadership group that live right here. If you don't want to be involved in God's judgment, you need to come away. You need to pull up your tent pegs and pack everything up and move away. And we see something similar to this in the book of Revelation, by the way, where God tells the people, come out from her and be separate, my people, so that you will not come under the judgment of Babylon. And so sometimes God says, you need to back away because these people are coming under my judgment. And people took up the offer wisely. Verse 27. So they got away from the dwelling of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Dathan and Abiram came out and stood at the door of their tents together with their wives, their sons, and their little ones. And this doomed their families. The fact that these men didn't back down themselves. They were unrepentant and insisted that they could stand on what they've already started. And that is that they're just as significant before the God of Israel as the high priestly family is. Verse 28, Moses said, and he's speaking to the whole group now, everybody that's within earshot, hereby you shall know that he who is has sent me to do all these works, and that it is, and that it has not been of my own accord. If these men die as all men die, meaning they just have a normal death, or if they are visited by the fate of all mankind, then he who is has not sent me. But if he who is creates something new, and the ground opens its mouth and swallows them up with all their belongings to them, and they go down alive into Sheol, then you shall know that these men have despised he who is. So God's told him what to say. Remember, Moses is acting as the prophet of God. He speaks the words of God. So he knows that the penalty is going to be something none of these people have ever seen before. That the ground is going to open up and swallow not just these guys, but all their stuff, and then close up right on top of them. The mention here of going down alive to Sheol. Sheol is the Hebrew way of expressing the place of departed spirits, the unseen place, the place of the dead waiting in this time period for their final disposition. And so Sheol was thought to be underground because that's unseen territory. So the idea here is that they're going to take the express elevator straight to Sheol while they're still in their bodies. And that's exactly what happens. Verse 31, as soon as he finished speaking all these words, the ground under them split apart, the earth opened its mouth, swallowed them up with their households and all the people who belonged to Korah and all their goods, so that so they and all that belonged to them went down alive into Sheol, and the earth closed over them, and they perished from the midst of the assembly. Now that would have been a scary thing to see, wouldn't it? One moment, here's this big block of tents on the south side of the tabernacle, on the border between the Kohathite Levites and the Reubenite leaders. And the next moment, the ground just opens in that limited area, a very clearly defined perimeter. And everybody just drops into the hole, their tents drop into their hole, and then the ground closes back over the top of it. And so there's nothing but open, rubbly space, you know, broken up ground where those tents used to be. That's it, in a matter of moments. Now that scares the people. All Israel, verse 34 says, who were around them fled at their cry, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up. So they're scared that maybe it's not going to just stop at the perimeter of this event, that it's just going to keep on going and taking tent after tent after tent. It doesn't, but that's what they're scared of, and so they're running away. Now, at that same time, remember, we've got 250 guys that were up in front of the tabernacle offering incense to God. And that's when fire came out from He Who Is and consumed the 250 men offering the incense. So the same thing happens to them as happened to the sons of Aaron when they offered strange fire. They are executed by the very presence of God, fire shooting out. Verse 36, then He Who Is spoke to Moses, saying, tell Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, to take up the censers out of the blaze. Then scatter the fire far and wide, for they have become holy. Now, this is the censers that these guys had when they were struck down, because now the fire of God has touched these pieces of metal, these censer pots. And so God wants these to be made into a permanent object lesson that only members of the Aaronic family can offer appropriate incense. So Eleazar is going to gather all these things up. Verse 38, as for the censers of these men who have sinned at the cost of their lives, let them be made into hammered plates as a covering for the altar, for they offered them before He Who Is, and they became holy. And thus they shall be a sign to the people of Israel. So Eleazar the priest took the bronze censers, which those who were burned had offered, and they were hammered out as a covering for the altar, to be a reminder to the people of Israel, so that no outsider who is not a descendant of Aaron should draw near to burn incense before He Who Is, lest he become like Korah and his company, as He Who Is said to him through Moses. So you remember the big bronze altar that is out in front of the tabernacle where they offer the animal sacrifices every day. The people bringing their sacrifices would be able to see that altar on a fairly regular basis. It was already made of bronze over wood. So now these things have been hammered down into flat plates and then somehow attached to the side of the altar. I'm going to guess it's probably on the side facing the entrance of the tent. Or facing the entrance, the public entrance to the tent, the places where the worshipers come from, so that when they come in from now on, they can actually see that there are the bits and pieces left of those who challenged the high priesthood of the Aaronic family. And that would be a permanent reminder never to try that again. Now, there is a very significant history event where a king who had been serving for about 50 years as king, and he was a good king, but he got it in his head that he could offer incense. And God strikes him with an outbreak of leprosy on his forehead while he's trying to do this. And the priest rushed him out, and he ended up spending the next 2 years as a leper before he finally passed away in his old age. But that's an event in the future as another reminder. Only the Aaronic priests are permitted to offer incense in the tabernacle or in the temple area. Back to our text in Numbers chapter 16, verse 41. But on the next day, all the congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and against Aaron, saying, "You've killed the people of He Who Is." Now, this makes me slap my forehead because it's hard to understand how in the presence of supernatural judgment of God, people still gripe that Moses and Aaron are not doing the people right. And yet this is the hard-heartedness of some people that hang around the congregation of the Lord, or around, as we would say today, the church. And it's very frustrating to see. Verse 42, when the congregation had assembled against Moses and against Aaron, they turned toward the tent of meeting, and behold, the cloud covered it, the glory of He Who Is appeared. And Moses and Aaron came to the front of the tent of meeting, and He Who Is spoke to Moses, saying, "Get away from the midst of this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment." And they fell on their faces. So as we close up today, once again, Moses and Aaron have to act as the mediators for a people that are acting stupid in the face of God's judgment because they think they know better than God, and they know better than Moses and Aaron. We'll mark our place there. I'll see you tomorrow, if God wills it.